Ciao people, before starting this episode I'm really happy to announce that I now open a new podcast called Il Film Migrato, which is gonna have the same topic and same style of making movies with Mattia, with the only difference that it's going to be in Italian. It's made mostly for Italian who live in Italy and also the one who live around, as well as those who can understand Italian, because I'm not just going to talk about Italian production, but also international. So I hope you can enjoy this other podcast as well as you can enjoy this episode. Ciao people, and welcome to a new episode of Making Movies with Mattia, the podcast for the people who work or want to work in the entertainment industry. I'm Mattia Capasso, and today I'm here to present my first editor. He specializes in feature film, branded content, and documentaries. With many experiences also in animation, he made Cut and Drag, a tutorial web series who explores some of the most complex filmmaking and the editing dilemmas. Italian like me, is currently living in Malta, working for both local and international production. I'm pleased to welcome Fabrizio Gammardella.
Hi, Mattia. Hi, thanks for having me on.
No, thanks. Thank you for being here. I hope, of course, the situation is good in Malta. Of course, I hope also your job is going great. Of course, let's start with yourself. You are a video editor, so I know many people know what's an editor. In your world, what's your job about and what are your duties?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah, exactly. I'm a video editor. I've been working in the video editing field for many years, 5 years in London, then in from 2015 to 2020. And then I relocated to Malta. So basically what I do, I kind of put the film together just to give an idea. So we get some footage from, let's say, a production, a private client or whatever it is. And then we need to cut this footage and to trim down everything to... can be 5 minutes, can be an hour, can be 30 minutes, but usually the footage is much longer. So we can get as up to 3-4 hours of footage worth of footage, and then we need to trim down to put everything together and to create some sort of product that makes sense for people. So it requires a lot of time. It requires a lot of practice, obviously, because basically you need to scrub through so much footage that sometimes can be overwhelming and you don't really know exactly what you need. So it takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of time. But by the time that you get the hang of it, it comes, you know, natural to you and it gets really easier and you start to enjoy the process. But before you can get to that point, you really need to put a lot of time into this kind of work.
Nice. Nice. Well, description about the editor. Of course, you say that you work both in London and also in Italy, right? So what's your job background and how did you manage to get where are you now?
So I started in Italy many years ago, almost 15 years ago. But unfortunately, you are Italian like me, so you know, especially in the south of Italy, it's really tricky and tough to, you know,
working in
be
Italy.
Successful. Yeah, be successful in this kind of field, because unfortunately in Italy, we don't really produce too many movies a year. There's not really a big industry. So I thought in 2015, since my sister was already in the UK, I thought, you know what, maybe I'm going to just relocate from Italy to the UK and see whether I can actually, you know, become successful as a video editor, because in Italy, you can't really work as a video editor. I think you can work as a filmmaker, which means that it's kind of a, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but it's like being a jack of all trades. So you need to do many different things. So you are a bit of an editor and a director and then an audio guy, but it doesn't really work like that in cities like London. So in London, you need to specialize in something. So I thought, you know what, let's try to relocate, which is something I did in 2015. It took me a lot of time, obviously, to get a foot through the door, because, you know, you are from a different country, you don't speak the language, you need to do a lot of networking, trying to build a new portfolio. But I think that it was worth it. It took me a couple of years, and then I kind of lucked up because one guy broke his wrist, an editor, and the company this guy was working for dropped an email to me and told me, you know what, we need to replace last minute this guy. Can you pop in straight away? Which, you know, it's something unusual. But I did it. And that campaign turned out to be a huge campaign with Kate Moss for suffragists, one of the biggest campaigns they've done over the past few years to launch a new product from Asia in suffragists for the first time. The product was from a Japanese brand. So I ended up working, you know, on a big Kate Moss campaign. And from there, I can actually, you know, it was all downhill because more and more companies, they started to call me, obviously, because they saw what I had worked on. And, you know, that's basically what the whole story.
So you never studied in, you only studied in Italy, right? You didn't do uni in the UK or... in another country.
Oh, you mean for editing?
If you study, where did you study exactly? This is a question came out now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I see absolutely what you mean. No, I started to work in Italy like a self-taught director. So basically, I used to run a company. And in this company, I was working as a director, video editor, location manager, as I said, like a jack of all trades. I was doing a lot of things. But when I moved to London, I pretty much straight away realized that was impossible there, because there you need to do something specific. You can't do everything, you know what I mean? Because when you get an email from a company, they want to know exactly what you do. And that's why I decided to specialize in editing, because there was more work. But in Italy, I used to do also directing and a few other things. But basically, I've been a full-time a freelance video editor since 2015. It is something I was doing before moving to London, but from 2015 to 2021, that is literally what I do day in, day out.
So you say your career in here start once you work for this Selfridges commercial, right?
Yeah.
Once you replace this guy.
Yeah, I replaced this guy that broke his wrist, and you know, everything started from there, because basically that was the first big campaign I was involved in. And since then, I worked in the fashion and beauty field for many years, which means that London Fashion Week, and I worked for blue chip companies like, you know, Maybelline New York and Selfridges and Harrods. A lot of brands involved in fashion and beauty. But at the same time, I was working as an animation director. That was a passion of mine. And also I was working in the regular short and feature film field. So cutting. But obviously you don't make, you are in London at the moment, so you know that you can't really make a lot of money out of, you know, feature short films. So if you want to really pay your bills in London, you got to work on probably corporate and commercials, that kind of stuff. So I had to do both at the same time.
Tough work. And it's, you know, also how, can I say funny, how everything, your career start, unfortunately, because someone get hurt.
No, I mean, but...
You're not the only one who will get like this. Even for me, I get in one of my first experience, I replace someone. And, you know, it's both good and sad how this industry work, because, you know, replacing someone can mean the hope for someone else.
Yeah, no, it is definitely true. I think that, I mean, if you really want to make it in this kind of career, because we know that it's tough when it comes to filmmaking in general, it's a really tough field. But you got to be persistent, but you got to be lucky as well. So that means that, you know, once you get a chance to prove that you are a really good editor and then you deserve people's trust, well, then you definitely need to do your best. Because as we say in Italy, You got to jump on the train, which means that by the time that you get the chance to do something, you must do your best, because otherwise you're going to be wasting an opportunity.
Yeah, also good to be, you know, a good reference and word of mouth from, you know, producer or people you work with. So yeah, true, totally true. As you mentioned before, you also work in animation. My question is, you know, you work both live action and animated. What's there's many difference on editing a live action video with an animated one?
Yeah, I mean, they are completely different. Literally, that's the same. You know, that's the same kind of difference that you got between, let's say, being Italian and being Japanese. I mean, just literally two different words. I mean, I know it sounds crazy because you think, I mean, but editing is editing. Yeah, I mean, the basic principles are the same, obviously. But when it comes to the pipeline, they are completely different. So the issue with animation is that basically there's no room for mistakes. Animation is extremely expensive and time consuming. When it comes to live action, it's different. You are on location and then you think, oh, you know what? Let's shoot something extra. Maybe we need a close-up, or maybe we need something else. And if you got time, you can shoot it. And then maybe you're not going to be using when it comes to the editing. And by the time that the footage gets to the editor, maybe you don't need it, but you shoot it. In animation, you can't do that. You can't just say, oh, you know what? I think we need 3 extra seconds, because 3 extra seconds, it means 75 frames if you're obviously editing at 25 frames per second. That means that you need someone to draw 25 frames, or half of those, obviously, in most of the cases, still means a lot of time and money you got to put into something extra. So you don't have room for mistakes when it comes to animation. So it is completely different. Way more complicated.
I interrupt you here just to ask if something came out now, but this one is mostly for those who are listening and doesn't know what is a frame. It's really basic question, but you know, many beginner doesn't know the word frame.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give you an idea, basically to create the illusion of movement in a video, you need to put pictures together. So one photo and then another photo. So let's say a guy is walking. So we got the first step, it's one photo. And then the step is a tiny bit further away, it's another photo. Each second, it's 25 photos, which we call frames. So in animation, the issue is that you need to draw all the frames manually. When you shoot, you just need to push record and that's it. And then the camera is going to do the work. But when it comes to animation, you can't do that. If you remember those tiny flip books we had when we were children. The flip books with the flip books with all the pictures that you can actually see the dog running or the ball bouncing. So as I said, when it comes to animation, you don't have time and most of the times you don't have money for extra shots, so for extra material. So you need to plan everything carefully, because otherwise, I mean, you're gonna be in trouble.
So in animation, literally every frame is money.
Yeah, exactly. It's money out of your pocket in most of the cases. Yeah, definitely.
Really interesting question, and you know, good that people might understand also, you know, how hard is making an animation video. Did you have any particular moment during one of your shift?
You mean when I was working on some projects?
Yeah, a particular project that, you know, really push you in, make you remember and never forget.
Yeah, definitely. But it's not
whatever is good or bad, then I don't mind.
It's definitely this one was definitely a tough one, because I remember once we worked on a campaign for MacArthur Glen, and MacArthur Glen, it's a big brand in clothing in the UK. It's really famous, and we were working on the I can't remember if it was the February Fashion Week in London, the one in September. I think it was the one in February. But anyway, I mean, the deadline and the turnaround was really, really quick. And the deadline was super tight. And we had to work, I mean, so many hours, a lot of editors. And there was a lot of pressure because, you know, the standards we had to reach for the client were really, really high. There was no time. That was really stressful. And I still remember that job, that task, that assignment as a particularly tough one, to be honest. I learned a lot during those days I worked for this company, but still, that was really, really tough. And I thought, you know what? I mean, I know that they are paying really well, but still, and I'm fairly quick as an editor. So I was already pretty skilled because I had already a lot of experience in the same field. So I wasn't, a rookie, and still it was tough. And that's a particular one where I really felt the pressure, because usually I'm not a guy that feels pressure. I'm okay, even with really tight deadlines, I'm always okay. But that one was way beyond. Was too much, probably.
It's funny how I work majority of my time on set, so in production. Every people on production that occasionally came, or the VFX artist or the editor to see how the scene are coming out, and every kind of crew always say to those who work in post-production, ah, you are lucky because you don't have the pressure of the set, you don't have the pressure, you are in your office just working on computer. I always see how people on set underestimate those on post-production.
Yeah, I think I got to be honest with you. I've been in their shoes because obviously I've been a live director myself when I was in Italy while I was running my company. So I've been on set and I've been in post-production for many years. And I got to tell you, it is kind of similar, the pressure. It's just the environment is different, but that's a huge pressure in post-production. And that's especially because people think that you can do everything in post-production. So when you're working on location, they kind of do understand that sometimes you can't do too much because maybe there are some hurdles or issues that you can't overcome. But in post-production, they think that just because you're working in a room, you can do everything in front of the PC. You can do anything, you know what I mean? But you can't, obviously, because there are many issues, time, footage, I mean, anything. So I gotta be honest with you. Probably the kind of pressure you get in post-production in London at the moment, I think it's higher than the kind of pressure you get on location. But obviously, that's just my experience. I don't know, obviously, because it depends on the production, it depends on budget and on several other things. But I can assure you that working in post is tough as well.
Ah, yeah. Personally, I met some other editor that also told me that, like one guy, which I will not mention, he told me that he stay in for 1 week, only 1 week of 7 days, completely in his room. He slept in his office. He ate in his office. He had shower in his office. So.
Yeah, I know, but this company I used to work with several years ago, when we were working on the Fashion Week, it wasn't unusual to have editors doing night shifts as well, which means that if you got something to deliver, and the first time I worked with them, the second times I worked with them after the Kate Moss project, that wasn't the Fashion Week. So that was the same company. And in that case, we had to deliver, I can't remember how many edits in 3 days, which means that the office was open 24 hours a day and they had night shifts at the same time. And this guy, he had to take over from me after my evening shift. So he worked the night shift and I came back the day after saying, oh, well, okay, hey, how did it go? What happened? So the guy left and he had literally messed up my edit. So I had to basically fix the edit he had worked on, which was mine, and then deliver by 10 in the morning, which means that I had a couple of hours to fix all the, let's call it mistakes he had done over the night shift. I mean, that was crazy, you know what I mean? Just literally crazy. So as I said, unfortunately, many people, they think that you can do everything in post. I mean, to a certain degree, you can, but time, it's a factor. Time is a factor, and can you can feed the pressure, definitely.
Mm, true. And I'm sorry for you on for this experience. This is a question came out to my mind right now. You mentioned that, you know, how many people consider the editor, you know, a lucky job because you can do everything you want in your office and on your computer. But you say it's not like this. I heard by some editor that at the end they take mostly order or from the director who work on that film or whatever video it is, or sometimes also the production. Who, in your point of view, in your experience, where did you take, let's say, order? Who give you the guidance on, you know, how to edit, how to make, you know, this video?
Okay, yeah. So it depends on the project. So most of the time, you work along with the director. So basically, it's the director that's got the final word on everything. But in some of the cases, if there's a production company that owns the rights of the short film, well, in that case, it's different. Well, in that case, you need to be careful because basically, it might be even the producer that's got the final words on everything. But it also depends on the kind of agreements he or she has got with the director. In my experience, when it comes to low-budget short film, usually the director is the one you need to, let's say, to please, to make happy. But if it's not a low-budget project, then, you know, there's this game of power between director and producer and a few people. But usually in 70% of the cases, it's director. Well, obviously, you got to be lucky. You got to be, a lucky guy because directors can make your life miserable, literally. and it's true, especially for the editors. The big problem is that basically the editor is not a pair of hands. We are not just, you know, pushing some keys on the keyboard. It's not like that. I mean, the editor, I think editor and DP are probably the backbones along with the director of a project, which means that sometimes a director can actually, I don't want to say not get along with editors, because if they don't, the project is not going to turn out well. But it might be tricky to, to work with each other. So you kind of need to click with each other. If you click with the director and you get along, well, then it's going to be amazing because you're going to be working together to make the project better. But if you don't get along and the director thinks that you aren't just a pair of hands, then it's over. I mean, you probably need to walk away from a project like that because it's gonna be really, really stressful.
So you never had a project where you were in charge on editing?
No, apart from my projects, basically. Yeah. So when I work, because I also edit as well my animations. So in that case, I'm the editor and I'm director and editor. So obviously in that case, I got the final word. But still, you need to get feedback from people. So even if you want to make, even if you're going to make, obviously, the final call, you still need to take on board people's feedback. Because obviously, you know, sometimes you grow too attached to a project and you can't really see the flaws of that project, and you need someone else to tell you, even if you're an editor. That's the same thing with the dentist, let's say. Even the dentist has got his dentist, you know what I mean? Because he can't fix his teeth on his own. That's the same thing for an editor. I mean, that's the same thing. So you're going to ask to a fellow editor or maybe someone else to take a look at your project. Then you get the feedback on board. And then obviously, you know, you make changes and amends and the kind of things. But usually, obviously, you know, you're going to be working along with the director.
Always related to my last question, where you follow order. In case instead it's a commercial, you need to listen what the client asks you to edit, right?
Absolutely. That's the biggest of the issues, to be honest. Yeah. And I tell you why, because unfortunately, you got three levels in that case. There are many people that can actually, you know, give you some feedback. And what happens is that sometimes inside the company, they don't really know exactly what they want. So maybe there's the art director, maybe there's the director of the commercial, maybe there's the CEO of the company, and then there's the, I don't know, the social media manager, and everybody's has got something to say, which means that can turn, you know, into a nightmare. And unfortunately, I've been involved in projects where this happened, and you didn't really know who to listen to. That was absolutely crazy. Because one day you made some changes, and the day after you had to go back to the previous edit and then to change again. And then, no, you know what? Maybe the one before the first one was even better. I mean, literally a nightmare. But in that case, to be honest, it's not up to you as an editor. So you make the changes, you get paid, try to do your best, and then that's it. But it's not up to you, because you are not, you know, part of the company. So the client, they need to get everything sorted on their end. You can't do more than you are supposed to be doing, to be honest.
Good answer. This really, really good answer. And also a good example you give before about the dentist. I like that. On next question, do you have any new project coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I'm working on a new short film, short animated film for children, because my first one was for children, but the second one was for adults, basically, because it was a short film which tried to raise awareness towards animal welfare. So it is not definitely a short film for children. But the new one I'm working on, which is about the relationship between a little girl and a stray dog, this one is for children. And at the moment, I'm working on this one. New technique, because it's going to be the first time I'm going to be involved in a 3D project. Most of my animated projects are 2D digital animated project. This one is going to be in 3D, which is really exciting. The pipeline is completely different compared to the 2D, but it's an exciting project. We got an amazing team on board. I'm really proud of the guys I'm working with. They got so much experience, and I can't wait to see it complete, to be honest, which hopefully is going to happen by the end of the year or by the end of next spring. And the project is called Super Trump.
Super Trump.
Yeah, because basically Trump, it means, I mean, people know, but if you write Trump, yeah, not like the
which
president.
Which Trump?
Yeah, not like the president. Yeah,
it means, yeah, that, like Lady Andrew Trump. If silly, yeah, silly example.
That's written spelled as Trump of Lady and Trump, exactly, and that's why it's called Super Trump, because of the Disney movie, and that's a stray dog, and also because Super Trump was the nickname of a guy who basically crossed the United States hiking. Many years ago, and died of starvation, I think in Alaska. There's a movie really famous about this guy, Alexander Super Trump, and the movie is Into the Wild.
I love that film.
Name, and that's the nickname of the main protagonist of the movie.
Yeah, the guy who died. They call like this.
Yeah, he died of starvation, because I think that he had an issue after winter. He couldn't find food. He couldn't cross back to where he was and wade. He couldn't wade a river, and he got stuck on the side of the river where there was not enough food. But I think he had some poisonous berries or something like that.
In the film, I remember was a poisonous plant,
yeah,
but reality
say. Yeah, absolutely.
Reality say guy, maybe something else.
No, you're right. And the guy was called Super Trump. That was his nickname. And that's why we decided it's a mixture between the Disney movie and Into the Wild.
Oh, I can't wait to watch.
Thank you.
You don't have any, not say trailer, but this, you have,
Absolutely, we have a Facebook page, so you can see a pitch trailer to the project. You can see some character designs, and you can see how we are working on the 3D models of the characters of the short film. Yeah, you can see everything on Facebook. It's called
I will share the Absolutely. Facebook page Supertron on the link on the post. You see, I always share a link to each episode.
So thank people you so can, much. Thank
people
you.
Can watch. Well, because I'm curious too. It's Into the Wild is a film I really appreciate. So, you know, I like to see this version.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing movie. It had a huge impact on me. And I thought, you know what? Sooner or later, I'm going to use that nickname. And that's, you know, yeah.
Yesterday, I watched with my girlfriend. She's really similar to this kind of thing. She watched a film about, you know, people leaving a city to live into the nature, and she wanted to do the same. Yesterday, we watched the Oscar film Nomadland.
Okay.
She's
I'm yet to watch it, but is it good? Is it any good?
I love it. It's good, but one suggestion I will give you, I think it's a film you should watch on a cinema. If you're watching on streaming, good TV, Dolby Digital and dark room and pretend it's a cinema because it has a really great photography.
I got 55 inches in my editing studio, so I think I can manage.
Use that in case you live with your girlfriend, invite them. Yeah. Pretend it's a cinema because deserve to be watched in this way. In fact, I feel it's bad that they didn't want Best Picture because it would deserve. And anyway, yeah, I was saying, now my girlfriend, she is planning to buy an RV.
Okay.
So it's a film that is not really similar with Into the Wild, but, you know, it gives the same idea.
Oh, no, I see. As I said, I'm yet to watch it, but I'm definitely going to be watching it as soon as possible because sounds a good one.
Yeah. And this might be my last question. This one is for those who are listening. What would you recommend to those starting out?
As editors or as filmmakers?
Let's say both. Start like maybe editor.
Okay. It depends where you live, to be honest. So my suggestion would be if you are in a country where the movie industry is not too big, my suggestion would be, to be honest, just to leave. Leave and try to pursue your dream going to a country where you can actually make it. Because the thing is, it is a really, really, really tough field. And, you know, trying to make a career for yourself in a country like Italy or maybe in a country where the movie industry is not so powerful can be extremely frustrating. It is already tough in a city like London because there's a lot of competition. There are a lot of people that are trying to work in the same field. So it is not easy. But on the other hand, it's a place where you can make it big. So my suggestion would be try to learn some English. Just go, you know, pack and leave because it's always a really good thing to do. It's going to be an amazing experience. It's going to be tough. But it's going to be great.
Especially now with Brexit, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I moved to London in 2015 and soon after the whole Brexit thing started. And I left a few months ago. So I've been in London and I've been in West London, in South London. I've been in Greenwich, in St. John's Wood. I lived in Harsden, which is close to Stonebridge Park, a really nasty and not the best area in London. So I've been pretty much everywhere, and I can assure you it is something that really, really makes you realize that in a city like London or New York or whatever, you can make it, but you gotta be willing and you gotta be ready to suffer a tiny bit. No pain, no gain, as I usually say. I know it sounds trite, but it's the truth. So my suggestion would be leave your country if the movie industry is not as big as it should be, because otherwise you can still make it, but the odds are going to be really low. It's going to be tough. even tougher than it's supposed to be. So I don't think it's worth it, in my opinion.
True, but that's what I always see personally too, that how many, you know, good talent too prefer to work outside. And not only in the filmmaking industry. I saw many, you know, Italian doctor moving or in UK to, you know, work in better hospital or, you know, even people who open their company. It depends. It depends. But yeah, it's a good tips what you give. What about instead about filmmaking? What suggestion would you give to this?
I mean, yeah, with filmmaking, it might be a tiny bit different. It depends what you want to do. So if you're happy, you know, to work on some corporate videos or maybe in the wedding field, I think you can actually work even in Italy. You don't really need to leave. But if your dream is actually movies, proper movies or big production, well, in that case, I don't really see what you can do in Italy or may in a small country. But as I said, I mean, this is really subjective. That's my experience. Because now I spent 5 years in London, you know, I learned a new language. I'm in touch with so many people. So I'm working with people from all over the world. So now my view is completely different compared to the guy I was when I was running my company in Italy. I didn't really want to leave Italy. Because I thought, I got my friends here, got my family. I didn't want to leave. I had to because I really wanted to test myself, to put myself, I wanted to get out of the comfort zone. That's why I did it. So the dream was bigger than the fear of living my country. So as a filmmaker, maybe you can manage to do something even in a small country. But as a video editor, or I don't know, a sound guy, or really, really complicated jobs that are not really considered in your country or in smaller countries, well, in that case, I think just leave as soon as you can. You got time to go back to Italy. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can always go back to Italy, but if you don't leave now, when you can actually do it. And I was already 30 years old. So sure. I left when I was 30 years old. But if you leave when you're 20, well, it's going to be amazing. I mean, 4 or 5 years, it's not going to change your life. So even if something, you know, if things don't play out well, you can go back to your country. That's okay.
But and you're maybe not return be better, return better, because now exactly, you manage to have more skill.
Exactly. I was about to say, you're not going to be the same person. You got, you know, experience. Maybe you got a decent portfolio. So your situation is going to be better compared to as it was before you moved. So, as I said, but it is just my personal opinion based on my experience. So
I agree with your opinion. I agree okay. Mostly because I did the same. So I did the same and, you know, I'm still happy that I live in London. Still happy. I love Naples. I love my country. I wish if I can, you know, to not say maybe return forever, but if I can work for both. I wish one day, you know, maybe some Italian or even in Naples, they're going to call me. I'm happy to stay for a while and work also with that production. So, you know, I came back now better because, you know, now I have more experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. Totally, totally, totally agree.
So really good opinion for me. I hope also those who are listening agree. If you disagree, you know, it's not the end.
That's okay. Everybody's entitled to his opinion. So I think that would be absolutely okay. But obviously, we know because we left. So it is different when you kind of get into an argument with someone that has never left his country. You think, yeah, but you don't really know what you're talking about. That's the thing. Sure. So it also depends who you're talking to. Because if you're talking to someone that has never left his country, never really tried to do something different, and you know, I don't think they can actually 100% understand. Well, obviously, it's really important that there's some sort of respect between each other in terms of opinions. But obviously, you know that, you know, if someone has never left Italy or another country, you know that he doesn't really know 100% what he's talking about.
True. But that's why, as you see, I recently opened also the another podcast completely was gonna be in Italian, the Il Filmigrato. From there, I'm going to interview, also people who work in Italy, just, to see their point of view even. To see, how also the Italian production work, or, even if it's not just Italian speaker that work in another country. So,
Oh, sounds extremely interesting. I think it's a really good idea.
I really want to thank you for those answer you give me. Love it what you said, and I really hope those who want to, pursue the editing career listen this. I want to thank you, Fabrizio. I wish you good luck. I don't have any answer, no more answer to ask.
Thank you. Thank you so much to you. That was my pleasure. And, thanks for having me on.
And thank you, Fabrizio, and thank you for you who are listening, and I'll see you on next episode. Ciao.